Chapter 22. The sequence of lights was speeding up, and a second red light had winked into life on the sphere at the centre of the device. A rising hum, felt in the bones as well as heard, built from the sphere, penetrating even the screaming roar of the engines as they gathered power. The heat from the engines and the device was growing, and Zahariel and Luther were forced back from the shuttle as it began to lift from the deck as automatic systems kicked in, responding to some remotely activated signal. "How do we stop it?" cried Zahariel over the roar of the shuttle's engines.
"I don't know!"
shouted Luther, pointing at an intership vox station on the wall of the embarkation deck.
"But we have to warn the Lion!"
Zahariel nodded in understanding as Luther fought to reach the shuttle through the rippling heat haze that surrounded it and the growing wash of superheated air billowing from its engines. Emergency lights flashed to life, and a wailing siren sounded as deck systems registered the massive build-up of heat and radiation.
"I can't get near it!" shouted Luther.
Zahariel slammed into the wall of the embarkation deck and pressed the all-decks stud, sending a warning to the entire ship.
"Embarkation deck one reports hostile vessel on board," he yelled over the screaming din of sirens and the ever-growing roar of the shuttle's engines.
Even as he watched, the shuttle lifted from the deck in a blast of heat. Zahariel heard a scream of pain, and Luther staggered away from the missile, for he could no longer think of it as simply a shuttle.
"Repeat," said a voice through the vox station. "Hostile ship?"
"Yes," cried Zahariel. "The Soroshi ship. It's a missile or a bomb of some sort."
Luther staggered over to him, his armor blistered and scorched by the heat of the enemy weapons engines. Zahariel looked over to where the missile had lifted off, its nose angling as though homing in on some unseen beacon aboard their ship. Blast doors rumbled open in response to the alarm, and work crews and emergency firefighters rushed onto the embarkation deck. Orange jumpsuited techs threw up their arms in response to the intense heat flooding the compartment. Zahariel felt his skin blistering under the intense heat and knew that they had seconds at best before the enemy missile's primary thrusters ignited, filling the deck with killing plasma and thrusting its warhead deep into the belly of the ship. In that instant, he realized what he had to do. He left Luther at the vox station and ran for the control panel further along the wall, ignoring the pain as his hair was burned from his scalp. Already, his armor was bubbling as the paint melted, and his steps were becoming leaden and heavy as the heat fused the joints. He pushed grimly onwards, knowing that he would only get one chance to save the ship and everyone on board. His steps became slower and his armor heavier, but he fought the pain to reach the wall-mounted deck controls. He glanced over his shoulder to see the missile fix on a point that would send it deep into the vitals of the ship, right where the Lion was meeting with the Lord High Exalter. At last, Zahariel reached the deck controls and smashed his fist through the plexiglass panel in front of the emergency controls. Desperately, he gripped the lockdown lever and hauled it shut. The blast doors at the deck's perimeter began to rumble closed, but before they'd even reached halfway to the floor, Zahariel hammered his fist on the integrity field override stud. More blaring sirens joined the ones already filling the embarkation deck with noise, but this one was louder and more strident than the others. A booming voice from overhead speakers blared into the deck.
"Warning! Integrity field shutting down! Warning! Integrity field shutting down!"
Zahariel pressed the stud again, holding it down in an attempt to hurry the shutdown procedure. Emergency crews ran for the closing blast doors in panic.
"Warning! Integrity field shutting down! Warning! Integrity field shutting down!"
"I know!"
shouted Zahariel. "In the name of the Lion, just shut down!" As if in response to his words, the fizzing glow surrounding the generators along the edges of the wide entrance bay faded, and the rippling haze of the stars steadied. A howling gale engulfed the embarkation deck as the atmosphere and everything not fixed in place was explosively vented into space. The sudden rush of air grabbed them like leaves caught on the wind and dragged them towards the opened bay. Zahariel grabbed onto the railings that ran around the edge of the embarkation deck and held on for dear life as the howling rush of air bellowed towards the open bay. Crates, boxes of tools and gurneys of ammunition careened through the bay, spiralling towards the void of space as it decompressed. The instant before his feet left the ground, he activated the magnetic soles of his boots, and the weight of his armour slammed to the deck, fixing him in place. Fuel pipes writhed like pinned snakes, and loose cabling waved and sparked in the gale. The rigged Tsuroshi shuttle was caught in the rush of air, the power of the decompression gripping it tightly and hurling it from the ship just as its engines fired. Spiralling out of control, the missile corkscrewed wildly as it tumbled away from the ship. Those techs and emergency personnel who had not yet reached safety were instantly blown into space, their bodies frozen and ruptured. Their screams were swallowed in the roar of escaping air. Zahariel watched as the Tsuroshi shuttle spun away from the invincible reason, and he was suddenly blinded as the warhead secreted within it detonated. Outside, in the cold, unforgiving darkness of space, it seemed as though the battle barge had given birth to a miniature sun. In less than a thousandth of a second, a brilliant ball of light appeared at its flank, flared to incandescence, and was gone. Despite having been designed to withstand hostile bombardment by enemy guns, many of the view portals on the ship's hull shattered, fragments of toughened glass raining out into the void like glittering diamonds. The blast wave thundered towards the ship, and only its automated damage control systems prevented further loss of life. Reacting to the abrupt decompression, blast-proof panels slammed shut all along the ship's length. The ship shuddered as though in the grip of a great leviathan of the deep, yet more klaxons and warning lights coming to life in the wake of the explosion. The blast wave rolled over the ship, and Zahariel felt as though every bone in his body was being shaken loose. At last, the terrible juddering ceased, and he collapsed to the deck, exhausted and groaning at the pain of his burns. He lay there for several minutes, the sirens, flashing lights, and shouts of rescue crews sweeping over him without understanding.
"Brother, are you injured?"
Zahariel turned his burned head and smiled as he saw that Luther was still alive.
"I thought you were dead," said Luther, shouting to be heard over the shrill warning klaxons.
"My armor saved me," he said.
"It is a good thing you are lucky, Zahariel."
"What? Lucky? How do you come to that conclusion?"
asked Zahariel, his voice slurring as the balms of his armor sought to counteract his fierce pain.
"Look around," gasped Luther. "Those Tsuroshi bastards nearly managed to kill the entire command hierarchy of the fleet. But you stopped them."
Zahariel could only look at the broken bodies littering the deck and feel rage at the atrocity he saw before him. But as quickly as the emotion surfaced, he suppressed it. The mental conditioning the Astartes went through helped them to control their emotions and make the optimum use of them when they were needed. Rage had its place in the heat of battle, but this was a moment for a cooler head. He pulled himself to his feet with Luther's help and leaned on the wall, gasping for breath in the frigid air of the restored atmosphere. Luther adjusted the comms frequency of the wall vox station, patching into the Invincible Reason's command net.
"This is Luther of the Dark Angels," he said. "Multiple casualties sustained on the embarkation deck. I want Medicaid team sent here immediately. Bridge Command, are you receiving me?"
"Hi, this is Bridge Command, receiving, sir," said a grainy, static-washed voice. "We have reports of a hull breach on your level. Instruments recorded as under control."
"That's correct, Bridge Command," confirmed Luther. "The breach was the work of the Tsuroshi delegation brought onto the ship half an hour ago. The Tsuroshi shuttle on the embarkation deck was rigged with an atomic warhead. Any Tsuroshi forces left on board are to be arrested immediately. Lethal force is authorized."
Luther spared a look at the destruction around them and whispered to Zahariel,
"As of approximately 1 minute ago, we are at war with the Tsuroshi people."
Another voice cut in over the voice of Bridge Command, and Zahariel instantly recognized it as belonging to the Lion.
"I want a strategium meeting with all commanders and seconds in command on board the Invincible Reason in half an hour's time. Is that understood?"
"Understood, my lord," said Luther, sharing an uncomfortable look with Zahariel.
The attack on the Invincible Reason was just the beginning. All across the fleet, and in the cities and lands of Tsurosh, the Imperials found they were suddenly attacked by the people they assumed regarded them as heroes. They had come to liberate the Soroshi from their ignorance, to deliver them from Old Night. They had come to bring them the wonders of the Imperium, to show them marvels. But the inhabitants of Sorosh had rejected the Imperium and everything it stood for. They rejected it with great violence, perpetrating appalling deeds of horror and bloodshed. They carried out dozens of atrocities, unleashing all manner of acts of terror. More than 1,000 Imperial Army and Navy personnel were on shore leave, enjoying the delights of the carnival, when the uprising began. Some were murdered, but most of those affected were the victims of abduction. They disappeared into the night, gone without trace, leaving no evidence behind of where they'd been taken or who had kidnapped them. The situation was clearer when it came to the fate of the Imperial institutions already present on Sorosh. In the space of 12 months, even with compliance yet to be fully certified, a dozen different organs of government had been transplanted from the fleet onto the planet's surface. Naturally, Lord Governor-elect First had established a residence in an appropriately palatial building in the administrative district of the heart of the capital city of Shalul. Similarly, in preparation for the eventual transfer of powers, various offices of liaison had also been established in the vicinity. At around the same time as the Soroshi shuttle exploded, an angry mob attacked the governor's residence on Sorosh, as well as the nearby imperial offices. Quickly overwhelming the few army troopers who had been left on guard duty, the riot's ringleaders dragged the imperial functionaries out onto the streets and hacked them to death with axes and knives as the crowd bayed for blood. Their bodies were spat on and dismembered, and then condemned to the fire as the mob set light to the imperial buildings and cast the evidence of their outrage into the flames. A few of the Imperials present on Sorosh managed to escape being murdered or abducted. Later, when these survivors told their tales, it would become clear that the entire population of the planet had exploded in a frenzy of bloodletting every bit as sudden and dramatic as the blast that nearly tore through the invincible reason. The survivors would talk of a primal savagery that descended on the people of Sorosh without warning. One minute the Soroshi had been their normal, charming selves, the next they had erupted into shocking, ferocious violence. Yet at the same time, there was never the suggestion that this violence was in any way wild or out of control. According to the survivors' accounts, the opposite held true. There was a terrifying calmness in the manner in which the Soroshi went about the killings. They were highly organized, as though each and every one of the thousands of rebels had earlier agreed on a specific role in the conspiracy, as well as an exact timetable by which all these tasks would take place. Most frightening of all, and many who believed in the imperial truth would find this especially troubling, was the almost machine-like perfection of this timetable. There would never be any definite proof of communication between the conspirators on Sorosh and their confederates elsewhere, yet they appeared able to synchronize their actions to the very second. Even when some part of their plan failed, their remaining agents seemed capable of adapting to new circumstances quickly, despite having no apparent means of communications with the rest of the rebels. It was an enigma, though it was hardly the most pressing issue commanding the attention of the Dark Angels.
Mayday! This is Bold Conveyor. Our hull is ruptured and we are leaking atmosphere. Request transfer of all available work crews and Medicaid teams from other ships in the fleet. We need help here!
This is the Wrath of Caliban calling the flagship. We demand an immediate update on the current status of our commanders. Over.
Intrepid calling. Mutineers have been subdued and the situation is under control.
Arbalest, this is Invincible Reason. Retreat from high anchor position at once and relocate to Anchorage Beta, or you will be fired upon as a hostile vessel. This is your final warning.
The bridge of the Invincible Reason was alive with a confused babble of voices. As Zahariel entered the command area with Luther beside him, he was immediately struck by the tension in the air. A dozen officers and ratings sat nervously at their stations, issuing terse instructions or holding conversations by intership comms with the other vessels in the fleet. Zahariel recognized controlled desperation in the voices of the men around him. It was the same sound he expected to hear in the voice of an army commander whenever the situation was fluid and the progress of the battle was uncertain. It was the sound of men holding fast to their duties, even when they suspected that war was about to render their duty, even their lives, irrelevant. It was the sound of warriors on the verge of panic. That sound ceased as a rating called out,
Master on the bridge!
Zaharia looked over to where another door to the bridge had opened, and the lion strode in, his face thunderous and his sword bared and bloody. Zaharia had never seen the master of the First Legion looking so angry, and he felt a kernel of appreciation stir in his belly at the thought of the war that such a fury might unleash. Nemiel walked alongside the lion, his expression similarly furious, as they marched towards an officer in the uniform of a fleet captain who stood talking to the ship's astropath. Zaharial and Luther made their way painfully over to the conference of senior officers. The fleet captain turned at the lion's approach and saluted sharply.
Captain Steenius, demanded the lion without preamble, what is the situation? I want an update.
The captain turned to the blind woman beside him.
This is Mistress Argenta, the fleet senior astropath. I am happy to see you, Lord Johnson. I was hoping you would...
Now, Captain Steenius, said the lion, the tone of warning in his voice unmistakable.
Of course, said Steenius, as he bowed and turned to the servitor manning a nearby bank of instruments. Raise the shutters.
A click, followed by a distant whirring noise, sounded as the blast shutters protecting the bridge's observation blisters slid back into their recessed bays to reveal the scene out in space.
We lowered the shutters as a precaution, said Steenius. What with a failed attack on us and the attack on the bold conveyor, I decided it best to take the fleet to general battle stations. Fortunately, the worst of it seems to be over.
The attack on the bold conveyor, said Luther.
What attack?
The lion turned at the sound of his brother's voice, and his eyes narrowed as he took in the wounded state of Zaharial and Luther. He said nothing of their condition, clearly filing it away to ask about later. Zaharia looked through the observation blister into space, horrified to see bodies floating in the cold of the void. Hundreds drifted slowly past the ship's observation blisters, like some grotesque form of parade inspection.
We've had attempted mutinies on 3 ships, said Steenius. In each instance, small groups of no more than 6 men launched attacks on the bridges of their ships. Mostly the mutineers were suppressed before they could do any real damage, but on the Arbalest, the mutineers managed to let off a torpedo salvo. They hit the bold conveyor and damaged her. The bodies you can see outside are casualties from the bold conveyor. Once the shooting started, I ordered the fleet to different stations to put more distance between each ship. Some of the bodies from the bold conveyor must have got caught in the backwash from our engines. That's why they're in orbit around us.
How badly was the bold conveyor damaged?
Demanded the lion.
Hull rupture, explained Captain Steenius. Most of the dead were army troopers who were sucked out into the vacuum when the torpedo hit.
He shrugged.
It could have been worse. I've sent extra repair crews to the bold conveyor via shuttle. Early reports indicate that the damage isn't bad enough to threaten her spaceworthiness, though it's likely to be a few days before she's fully operational again.
So, the situation in space is under control.
For the most part, yes, answered Steenius. But according to Mistress Argenta, that's the least of our worries.
A conference was held in the Invincible Reason staterooms, the senior members of the Dark Angels gathering to hear the words of Mistress Argenta. The Lion and Luther spoke in a huddled corner, their words unheard by anyone, though the intensity of their conversation was plain for all to see. Brother Librarian Israfael stood beside a robed member of the Mechanicum, and a number of servitors accompanied them both. The atmosphere was tense, and Zahariel could sense the urgent need in every man gathered here to strike back at the Soroshi. He and Nemiel sat at the briefing table trying to make sense of the last few hours that had seen brother turn on brother and former allies take arms against them. Initial theories suggested that the mutineers on the Imperial ships had been drugged and rendered open to treacherous suggestion by a concoction distilled from the perfume of the plants that thronged every building and surface of the capital city. This was a morsel of information to be digested later, for a much greater threat was apparently arising in the dusty hardpan of the deserts in the north of the main continental mass of Sorosh. The lion turned away from Luther abruptly, his face a mask of unreadable emotion, as he took his seat at the head of the table. Luther took his seat at the table too, and Zahariel could read his features much more easily. Their second-in-command's expression was one of despair and anguish.
We do not have much time,
snapped the lion, cutting through the babble of voices around the room. At his tone, every head turned in his direction, and every voice was stilled.
"Mistress Argenta," said the lion, "speak."
The astropath took a hesitant step forward, as though being near the awesome figure of the Primarch was too much for her to bear for any length of time.
"You may have heard the High Exalter talk of beings known as the Melechim during his outburst against the Imperium. It is my belief that this is the Saroshi name for a certain breed of Xenos creature that dwells in the warp."
"How are they a danger to us?" asked Nemiel. "Surely they're confined to the warp."
"Normally that would be the case," said the astropath, turning her blind eyes towards Zahariel's cousin. "But the astropathic choir has become aware of a growing build-up of psychic energy in the northern deserts, indicative of a major warp rift."
"And what is causing this?" asked the lion.
"We do not know."
"Speculate," ordered the lion.
"Perhaps the natives of this planet have some way of focusing the energies of the warp by some means we are not aware of, my lord."
"For what purpose would they do this?"
"It is said that if one has a host of strong enough will, it is possible to imbue it with the presence of a creature from beyond the gates of the Empyrean."
"And you think that is what's happened here?"
"If such a thing is even possible," pointed out Zahariel. The lion shot him a venomous look that shocked Zahariel.
"We must assume that it is, for now. The treachery and deviousness of the Saroshi are without bounds. We must trust nothing from this point onwards, and assume the worst."
The lion turned his attention back to the astropath, and Zahariel felt a wave of relief wash over him at being released from that hostile glare.
"Mistress Argenta," said the lion, "if the Saroshi can indeed summon some Xeno beast from the warp, how bad might it get?"
"If they succeed, it could be the worst thing you have ever fought."
"Why can't we simply bomb the site from orbit?" asked the lion. "That would put paid to most threats."
"Not this one, my lord," said Argenta. "The psychic build-up is already underway, and any attack that fails to halt that build-up will be doomed to failure."
"Then how do we fight it?"
In response to the lion's question, Brother Librarian Israfael stepped forward.
"I may be able to answer that, my lord. Ever since our legion fought on the bloody fields of Perissus, I have been working to develop a means of fighting such creatures. This was before you joined us, my lord."
The lion scowled, and Zahariel was reminded how much their Primarch disliked being reminded that the legion had existed before he had become its master.
"Go on," ordered the lion. "How do we fight this rising power?"
"An electropsychic pulse," said Israfael. "Of course it is difficult to know precisely how it will interact with the energies being gathered, but I am confident it should disrupt the ambient psychic field and..."
"Please, more slowly, Israfael,"
said the lion, raising his hand with the palm facing outwards to stem Israfael's words.
"I am sure you know what you're talking about, but remember, we are warriors. If you want us to understand you, you will need to keep it simple and start from the beginning."
"More simply, of course," said Israfael, and Zahariel did not envy him being under the white heat of the Primarch's gaze. "I believe it may be possible to counteract the build-up of psychic energy by detonating an electropsychic pulse weapon in the vicinity."
"What is this electropsychic pulse weapon you talk of?" asked the lion.
"It is simply a modified cyclonic warhead," explained Israfael. "With the help of the Mechanicum Adepts, we can remove the explosive part of the warhead and replace it with an electropsychic pulse capacitor that will generate a massive blast of energy inimical to creatures composed of immaterial energies. As for destroying the psychic build-up, ideally we need to detonate the device as close to the source as possible."
"I see," said the lion. "What form will the device take? Obviously it is a bomb, but can you adapt it to be dropped from a shuttle?"
"No," said Israfael, "for the pulse of the blast must be directed by one schooled in the psychic arts."
"In other words, you need to be there when it detonates."
"I do," confirmed Israfael, "along with as many other brothers with psychic potential who can fight." The lion nodded.
Begin work on adapting such a weapon immediately. How long do you estimate the work will take?
A few hours at most, said Israfael.
Very well, said the lion. Begin at once.